Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the New World Order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hey everybody, thanks for staying with us through the intro segment into our guest segment. This is Dave Hodges and you're listening to The Common Sense Show. Really glad to be with you. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And listen, you guys are awesome. You're spreading the word. I mean, I get so much feedback that you guys are spreading these broadcasts and you need to. And you need to share with liberals as well, because we don't want to just preach to the choir. We don't have much time left, folks. And before we join our guests, our esteemed guest, John Moore, ex-Green Beret, current talk show host, activist, you're going to really enjoy John. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we're all in agreement. The next 30 days may be the most critical in all of American history. So please get to work. Now, if you don't have your storable food, you really need to do so. We sell MPS, and they have absolutely great quality, good delivery, especially in this environment, but the food supply chain is collapsing, and I read that everywhere. So you really don't have a lot of time, and they got all kinds of specials. Go to preparewithdave.com. That's preparewithdave.com for 25-year shelf life, good-tasting food, lots of variety. You really want to go there. And if you haven't heard, we have a TV show, thecommonsenseshow.tv, for less than a cup of coffee per month. $2.50, you can get in-depth interviews with no commercial interruptions and also no censorship. And this thing is exploding. We're trying to hit as many venues as we can until we're taken down, and we're all going to be taken down. Make no mistake about it. It's just a matter of time. So we're trying to reach out on as many platforms as we can. And we have a guest today that I've known for years and years. We used to broadcast together over at RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. And they are doing a good job there spreading the word of freedom. And John's show up there, I think it's the best show on that network. And I think it's one of the best shows out there. And our mutual friend Paul Martin is always telling me, you won't believe what John talked about today. And it's always groundbreaking. It's tremendous. John, I hear you laughing in the background. It's really my pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, Paul Martin is an Oklahoma cowboy. He's relocated to Colorado and a former Marine and very, very dear friend. Well, Dave, we want to get this show off to a start where we want to get people's attention. And I'm going to start with laying some groundwork. First of all, there's more than 3,300 counties in the United States. All but about 300 or so are rural or mostly rural. Most of those counties have at least one coffee shop where the farmers and ranchers come in typically mid-morning. They finish their chores and they have a late breakfast and they talk about the events of the day. So I'm at one of these coffee shops four months ago, and the table next to me there were four men. I know two of them were veterans, Vietnam vets. And the topic of discussion between these four men was the following: the merits of lethal versus non-lethal booby traps. And this conversation is not an isolated incident. This is happening in most of the 3,000 rural counties around the United States. If you don't believe that's true, well, you're sadly mistaken. Another neighbor, he has the proper license to buy ammunition in bulk directly from Winchester. He travels up to Alton, Illinois, after he's taken orders from the local guys to buy case lots of the common ammunitions, 223, 9mm, 45, 308, and so forth. And then he brings it back and delivers it to the men who've ordered that ammunition. This has been taking place since last winter. These men have been getting ready for most of this year, Dave. They know what's coming. They don't want to see it come. They'd much rather live their lives, have their careers as farmers, as ranchers, as loggers, working in the mines, whatever it might be, and spending time with their family, going to church. That's what they want to do. They don't want to have to deal with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, but they're preparing to do so because they feel they have no choice. Point being, Dave, we had about 4 weeks. Let's see, today's the third, so exactly 1 month until Election Day. Exactly 1 month. And if you have not prepared, it's time to make those last-minute preparations. Make sure you've got a good stock of water, that you've got an inventory of food, a minimum 30 days. More is better, of course. Plus radios, ammunition, medical supplies, all the things people need to deal with supply chain being shut down. Another story here, Dave. The manager of the local supermarket's a friend of mine. We have lunch about once a month. We get together for coffee every 2 or 3 weeks. He says, John, he's been a manager for years. John, for years, I've ordered from my warehouse every once a week 850 items. And 3 days later, I get 850 items. He says, and that's all changed now. For the last 5 or 6 months, I order 850 items, and I get about 400, less than half. So the inventory arrives, and I've got my clerks spreading the inventory out on the shelves to make it look like we've got product instead of empty spaces. That's also happening nationwide. The supply chain is already in the process of breaking down, Dave. And if you're not aware of that, you need to become aware of that right now. You can still buy essentials, soups, stews, chilies, things like that at your local supermarket while you can. The products that you sell, Dave, are excellent, and I encourage people to get those for long-term storage as well. And stock up with the time we have left, because once that time's gone, well, it's gone, and there won't be any stocking up, will there, Dave?
No, absolutely not. And you're just echoing what I'm reading about the supply chain, but the other thing that I'm seeing, too, is all the flood damage we've done to our fertile farmlands is causing us to really consume this year and next year's harvest. So we're eating our way into a deficit.
Right, right. Well, there's already a lot of food. Some food suppliers, they only want GMO-free food. They can't even get it in this country because so much cross-contamination with the GMO crops contaminating the non-GMO crops. So they're resorting to getting food from South America and other places that truly is GMO-free. Another issue, kind of a side issue, even if it's got GMO, it'll still fill up your belly and keep you alive. And when worse comes to worst, you eat whatever you got to eat, don't you, Dave?
Absolutely. What's there is what's there.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we got winter coming upon us. Even where you are, it'll eventually become winter. I don't know how bad the winters get there, but in much of the country, and we have below freezing temperatures, people need a way to heat up their home without electricity. You might say, well, I got a gas furnace. Well, what makes that gas blow through the house? It's an electric blower motor. You may say, I have a wood-burning furnace. Well, a wood-burning furnace typically has an electric fan also. So a backup way to heat the home is very wise, and people need to be looking into that now while they can also, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely, and they should start yesterday. There's going to come a time when they're not going to be able to access much of anything.
It's already true when it comes to common caliber ammunition. 9mm, 45, 223, 308. The common calibers are already difficult to get, and when you do get them, the price has gone up dramatically. Even building supplies. I have a blood relative. He's a contractor. He says, John, the price of almost everything has doubled the last 9 months. And I said, really? He said, yeah, really. And it makes it difficult to bid a job because typically the bid is put in 3 to 4 weeks before it's accepted because the prices could raise again between the time the bid is given to the homeowner and it's accepted. It's putting these contractors in a bit of a quandary, isn't it, Dave?
It's going to be a rock and a hard place for everybody. And the other thing that's happening, too, and I don't know what's going to happen first, the ability to get food and that's lost, or food inflation, hyperinflation will make food unobtainable. And the reason I say that, John, not only the price is going up, but packaging is going down. It's the way the manufacturers are hiding how bad the price situation's getting.
Well, that's been going on for 20 plus years. The box is getting thinner and narrower, while the height and width is still more or less the same. That's nothing new, but I assume it's probably getting worse, isn't it, Dave?
Well, it's becoming noticeable to me. I don't do the shopping in our family. My wife wouldn't trust me. But I look at these packages and go, honey, these are like really small. And she goes, oh, that's been going on, yeah. She goes, they're trying to hide how much this stuff really costs now.
Right, right. Well, typically in a third world country, there's simply no food available. But in a first world country, we have food, but it just becomes unattainable in terms of pricing. That's what I expect to see. There'll still be food, but you won't be able to afford it.
Exactly. Well, there will be food, and you'll be able to afford it if you do certain things. My humble opinion is I think we're being set up, and I base this on the conditions that we didn't open up the processing plants, packaging plants for food when we could have. COVID, right. Schmovid, you know, put hazmat suits on, put the National Guard in. We didn't do it, and now we're going to pay the fiddler for this. But if you want food, I have a feeling you're going to have to cross on the other side of the gate where the barbed wire faces in. What do you think?
Right. Well, that's very possible. And as you know, Dave, in my bio, I've been a criminal investigator most of my adult life. And in many investigations, you look at what's the same and what's different. And let's look at Sweden. What's the same and what's different? What's different is a lower mortality rate per 1,000 people. What's different is also almost no lockdowns in Sweden. So a lot of times when you want to solve a problem, you look around and say, well, who's already solved this? I don't need to reinvent the wheel. I'll find somebody who's already done it properly and safely, and I'll duplicate what they've done, which brings us back to Sweden. They've properly and safely pretty much dealt with the COVID without the lockdowns, haven't they, Dave?
Well, they have, and so why are our numbers so much worse than their numbers?
Well, once again, look at what's the same, what's different. No lockdowns in Sweden and massive lockdowns in our country. Dave, human beings have been dealing with viruses and pandemics for many, many centuries. This is the first time I'm aware of, and I've talked to some historians, that we've quarantined the healthy people. That's not what's done in a quarantine for many centuries. And what we do and with quarantines is we quarantine the sick people. We don't quarantine the healthy people.
Exactly.
That's what's worked for centuries. And it's what's not being done here. And what's not being, and what is being done in Sweden, of course, is they quarantine sick people. They don't quarantine everybody else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, we know that that COVID strikes people with comorbidity issues. It's not a singular cause of death. And usually over the age of 65, if you're under 50, I look at the CDC data, and you know the data's flawed. But even right. with their data, your chances of dying of COVID under the age of 50, unless you got a serious health condition, are about zero.
Exactly. Well, sister, a very dear friend of mine, he's a medical doctor. His sister is a medical doctor and a county clerk in Missouri County. One of the jobs of the county clerk in Missouri is to keep track of all the vital statistics, including death certificates. And this woman, God bless her, she's under a lot of pressure to change death certificates to represent people dying from COVID as opposed to what they really died from. And God bless her for resisting as best she can. It's a lot of pressure on this woman. But once again, we got 3,300 counties in this country with an administrative person or office in charge of vital statistics. And I don't believe what's happening to my friend's sister is an isolated incident. I believe it's happening in most 3,000 counties plus in this country. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think you're right. And I'd like to ask you a question about that. Did you get any feel for where that pressure for her to lie on these death certificates is coming from?
I have not yet, because I haven't interviewed her personally. It's just secondhand from her brother. She doesn't live that far from me, about a one-hour drive, the county that she lives and works in. And I need to make it a priority to find out where the pressure is coming from. If it's the state health people in Jefferson City, Missouri, or someplace else. Even the CDC.
Do you know, John, that when they pay for approximately $13,000 for a diagnosis, a COVID diagnosis, and $39,000 for a COVID death, I know who's paying the money. Do you know who receives the money? Is it city, county, state? Do you have any idea?
Well, I thought it went directly to the hospital is what was my impression.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that explains a lot.
If they don't get the money, why would they bother doing it?
That's true. I've had doctors tell me. I had a guy actually call me, and he sent me an email and says, Dave, can I talk to him, a doctor in New York City? I got to tell you about this terrible fraud. And I gave him my number, and he calls me, and he says, I could never go on the air with this, and you know what would happen to me. But he said, I had a patient that was in kidney failure and was a days, hours away from dying, and contracted COVID on the last day, and the medical examiner came back and ordered me to change the death certificate.
They have that power. Well, that's amazing, Dave. And it's very unfortunate.
It is. And then there were four people in California who were working in a medical office, and they thought, well, we're going to go get tested today. So they showed up about 10 a.m. They did the paperwork and waited and waited and waited. Pretty soon it's 2 p.m. And they said, that's it. We're going to eat lunch. We're going back to work. They each got letters within 5 days saying they were COVID positive, even though they never tested.
Well, Dave, I have some breaking news for one of your neighbors there in Phoenix. He's my Thursday guest, the John Moore Radio Show economic advisor, Steve Hunt. Big guy, tough guy, healthy guy. He got the COVID. And he's in a hospital for 14 days, which means, you know, 3 shifts per day. That would be one doctor has to visit him every shift. That's for hospital rules. So he had 3 doctors a day visiting him for 14 days. Without exception, they all told him the following. They said, Steve, this is public information, by the way, no secret. Steve, you have type A blood. What we found in treating these COVID people, the ones who get really, really sick like you, also have type A blood. It doesn't matter if it's A positive or A negative. Now, that's not being talked about anywhere that I'm aware of. Have you heard of that?
I have heard that blood type makes a difference, but I haven't heard anything as specific as you just stated.
That's very specific. Very specific.
Very much so.
He recovered. He's back in the saddle doing his business, which is an economic advisor for people that call him and be on my radio show every Thursday. But that's what he learned directly from the MDs. 3 MDs a day for 14 days, and I'm not sure how many that would be, because there's probably some duplication. But they all, without exception, said the same thing. If you have type A blood and you get the COVID, you're in deep trouble.
It sounds like an engineering issue. In other words, was this engineered to attack type A people?
Well, we don't know that. We know what it does. We don't know why. That's an unanswered question that we may never know the answer to.
I'll give you another unanswered question. People frequently will contact me from around the world, and some of them are doctors. And where I'm hearing the most from is Australia, Germany. And what they're saying to me is, Dave, we believe China engineered this to bring down the economy of the United States, and they faked how bad it was, because we've never really seen real examples of extreme virulence here in our countries.
I was on my Caribbean cruise in February and watching TV during breaks, and most of us saw the video coming out of China where a man would be walking down the street in some city in China and just fall over dead and bleed out. And my question all these months, Dave, has been, how come it's not happening here? Well, probably because it didn't happen there either, is my answer to that.
Yeah, we're on the same page. Totally on the same page with this. I really believe that this is engineered by China. This is not as severe as they say. But what about a second wave? Do you have any thoughts on that, any indications
on that?
Well,
there's plenty of unverified stories and beliefs that second wave will be hitting us soon. If it doesn't hit before a month from today, I'm not sure it would serve any purpose, because I think a lot of this has to do with the election and trying to destroy the president's campaign. The stories I've heard and read about a second wave, I can't find anything to really get a firm handle on evidence. And I live in the world of evidence, Dave, as you know. But it is something to be watching for and be concerned about, I believe.
How concerned are you about a possible Chinese CHICOM presence both north of our border, south of our border, and inside of our country?
Well, before you and I ever met, I was getting reports of CHICOM presence, military presence in Mexico. Very dear friend of mine, he's been on my show several times. His YouTube video of him doing a presentation to Oath Keepers is, I think, 2.5 million viewers. Command Sergeant Major Dan Page. He says, John, I got on a helicopter in MacDill Air Force Base in Florida. I flew across the Gulf of Mexico, this is 20 years ago, to a Russian military base in Mexico. I said, really? He says, oh yeah, really. So this presence has been going on for decades. The dream of every military commander is to pre-position your men, your supplies, and your equipment near the where the war is going to take place before the war takes place. that's always been the dream of every general, to be able to do that. And in fact, they've done that in Mexico and in Canada. They also pre-positioned men, Russian Spetsnaz, in this country. I have verified reports from people I trust connected to Homeland Security and FEMA that we know the locations of many of these Spetsnaz. Spetsnaz is an acronym. It's about two foot long of words, Russian words, for the Russian Special Forces, by the way. Let's educate the audience a bit on who Spetsnaz are. What do you think, Dave?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. The training begins in kindergarten. I have a very dear friend, a couple. They escaped the Czechoslovakia during the communist days. And he speaks great English, better than many of my hillbilly neighbors, but you know he is not a native-born American. So I asked him, I said, how do you get a, and of course the Czech language is a Slavic language, just like the Russian. I said, how do you get a native-born Slavic-speaking person to speak English with the Nebraska neutral accent, like Johnny Carson? He says, John, there's only one way. You start training them when they're 5 years old. So the Spetsnaz recruiters go to Russian kindergartens, and they pick out the five-year-old boys who they can tell through diagnostic testing 13 years in the future when they're 18 will be athletic and bright and agreeable to the military training. And they take them out of the normal Russian kindergarten. They put them in a Spetsnaz kindergarten where they're immersed in English. Everything they see, everything they hear, everything they touch is in the English language. Start at the bottom, left to right. By the time they're 18, they speak English with the Johnny Carson, Nebraska neutral accent, and they think that jumping out of an airplane in the middle of the night and killing people is perfectly normal. That's who they bring to this country. They can pass as Americans. They look like Americans. They act like Americans. They dress like Americans. And, of course, they talk like Americans. And I've mentioned this on my show a number of times, that they have various covers that they use when they're here to disguise who they are and what they're really doing. When the balloon goes up, another old military term that goes to the artillery balloons in the Civil War era and after, when a balloon goes up, these teams will be activated as assassination teams to assassinate local officials, county officials, state officials, including anybody who might be seen as a leader, pastors of churches, principals of schools, owners of companies that have a lot of employees, to create havoc and cut the head off any quick regaining of control by the people by making use of local folks, local men and women who have leadership, proven leadership abilities. That's already taking place also. These people are in place, the Spetsnaz. The Chinese have a bit of a problem because they can't look like Americans. They're just working undercover in restaurants and in warehouses and in these free trade zones, which are actually Chinese real estate. The local sheriff can't go in there. So that's where they are, ready to be activated when the time comes. So I share your concern. I've been reading your articles for years, Dave, that there will be what you refer to a Tet Offensive. I lived through the first Tet Offensive. I was part of it. And the Tet Offensive in 1968, the end of January, was when the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese attacked all the provincial capitals at the same time with everything they had. The first 3 days, we weren't sure who was going to win. It was really very dicey who exactly was going to win that. We eventually, American firepower, overwhelmed the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese, and we kicked their butts really good. But those first 72 hours, Dave, it was really touch and go.
It was, yeah. They even took over the embassy in Saigon.
They did. I was laying on my belly 90 miles from the Saigon, listening to the radio. That was our only source of information. And I'm thinking to myself, what chance does Corporal John Moore, 20 years old, have if the safest place in the country has Viet Cong saboteurs inside the walls? That's what I was thinking at the time. It was not very hopeful, to say the least.
It was, but my version of the Tet Offensive here is we know there's a lot of embedded terrorists. And forget the soldiers for a second, the foreign troops. But embedded terrorists, particularly MS-13, and I've got this a lot from DHS, Border Patrol, and they were brought in largely during 2014, 2015, And there are occasional busts. I mean, the DOJ busted a bunch of them in New York City, about 90 of them around a year ago, but there are a lot more than 90 that came in. And what people don't know, and I say it over and over, they are the assassins for the cartels.
Right.
And I believe that's why they've been brought here.
UPS aircraft used to haul cargo can also be reconfigured in hours to haul people. And we've got verified reports of UPS planes landing in what might be called regional airports. They're not, at night there's almost no activity at these regional airports, like Springfield, Missouri, for example. And offloading men who don't go through customs and go straight to waiting vans where they disperse all over the country. We've been getting verified reports of that for years, Dave.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. In fact, I'll go a step further. I have DEA contact that approached me 7 years ago and told me about the training that was going on in Central America between Middle Eastern terrorists and cartels together to form paramilitary units. I'm sure you're aware of that, too.
Oh, I am. I am. I haven't done any time in Central America, but friends of mine have. That's just part of the world I live in. And they're aware of this training as well. We have one ally in Central America. That's El Salvador. I don't know how long they can last against Russian tanks crossing their border. But for the time being, we got one ally in Central America, that being El Salvador.
Are you getting indicators? Because I am. I know Steve Quayle is. Paul and I have talked about this, that we're under some level of continuity of government, particularly in Utah, the Richfield area, Kingman, Arizona, with underground tunnels. You get any indication this is going on?
Well, I have firsthand information on that. At Missouri counties, I'm a native Missourian. Missouri has 113 counties. Every county has a county courthouse with all the various offices, the collector's office, the assessor's office, the county clerk, the circuit clerk. Many of these counties are putting the critical files on thumb drives once a week. Those thumb drives are kept in remote locations away from the courthouse. There's also preparations made to protect the county commission. In our county, it's three men. It always varies. Sometimes it's three, sometimes it's five, maybe even seven in some cases, to protect these men because they're the ones who write the checks so that there can be a continuity of government in case all hell breaks loose and they still need to pay people and buy stuff. They got these three men in a safe location where they can still write checks and conduct the business of the county. That's already taking place, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, we've got had reports at Richfield, and I was sent an airplane tracker. And on a Saturday about a month ago, in a town of 5,000 people, I tracked, with an oversized runway, I tracked 21 planes came in that day.
Are these civilian aircraft or military or government, you know?
Don't know, and I'm not smart enough to know that. That you could put your mouse on the plane and get a tail fin number.
Well, it's called the N number, and the N number is public record. Sometimes in these covert operations, the aircraft has no N number. That is public record, and it can be looked up.
Mm-hmm.
But that is significant. That's a lot of aircraft for a small strip.
Yeah, and also I got reports from other places, same thing going on there, but I didn't have any confirming radar data. But it's definitely going on. And then at Kingman, it was interesting. Kingman is the hub, I understand, for Koga underground tunnels in the West. And at the Walmart there a month ago, I was contacted by an activist in Kingman, and she was telling me, she took pictures, and there must have been 1,000 soldiers that came in civilian buses, unmarked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they were just milling around, and I was told by military people I know that they're likely there, if we're under continuity of government, to seal off the hidden entrances so people don't stumble upon or enter these areas while we're under continuity of government.
Well, continuity of government is a good thing, that men and women are making plans to survive the attacks, and that's a good thing. It's not necessarily anything nefarious at all. That the government knows this is coming, they're preparing to deal with it in the most effective way they can. The government doesn't have the resources to protect the general population. That does not exist. It's not going to exist. They have the resources to take care of themselves and protect vital infrastructure and have continuity of government. At the at the county level and at the state level as well as the federal level.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The other thing I'm associating with this now is the attempt at a coup and a possible civil war connected to these actions. And we're getting some indicators that Trump is not as stationary as it seems, that they're moving him around because they're worried about a coup. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. With the resources of the Secret Service, I'd be surprised if they're doing that. But anything's possible. All bets are off.
Well, I understand the Marines are doing a lot of the security now.
Well, the Marines are the Marines and the Navy both are the most resistant to the New World Order, mm-hmm. and they have been for many decades. The traditions of the Navy, and of course the Marines are a subsidiary, I don't want to hear it, but they are a subsidiary of the Navy. The Navy provides all their logistical support, which means most Marines are combat fighters, the majority of them, much more so than any other service, Army or Navy included. So it doesn't surprise me that the the Marines would be used to provide extra security, probably a layer of security outside the perimeter set up by the Secret Service. And when I set up security for a VIP, that's what I do. I have different layers of men providing security for the VIP that the perpetrators have to get past before they get to the VIP. And that's highly likely what's going on. That makes a lot of sense to them. If it is happening, I'm glad it is.
I am too. And I'm glad to see if steps are being taken to protect our president. Do you have any sense about the next 30 days, election fraud? I know it's kind of a crapshoot to guess, but what does your gut tell you?
Well, the vote fraud will be rampant. That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition, what I call the socialist, communist, Democrats, Muslims, they want chaos. And they're going to get chaos. That's their goal, is to create doubt, to create wondering who really won this election. That's their goal. And they will achieve their goal, because the mainstream media will be complicit in helping them achieve that goal of making people wonder, well, who won this thing? What needs to be protected is the Electoral College. That needs to be protected by any and all means necessary, because that's really who determines who will be the next president, not the popular vote. There's, of course, efforts to eliminate the Electoral College. Our opposition, they hate the Electoral College. They want the popular vote because they want to be a democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a republic. If we were a democracy, then the popular vote would matter, but it doesn't. The Electoral College is what determines who will be the next president. So I'm sure that at the highest levels within the federal government, maintaining the integrity of the Electoral College, make sure that all the men and women involved are safe and are able to carry out their duties properly and safely will be a matter of the highest priority, Dave.
A lot of people are saying, okay, civil war is inevitable regardless of who wins. Do you agree with that, A, and B, how would a civil war commence in this country?
It won't be anything like any other civil war we've had previously. The first civil war really wasn't. It was a war between two countries as opposed to an internal war. This will be entirely different. It will be primarily in the urban, suburban areas, on one hand, on the other. Our opponents, our enemies, they will attack infrastructure. It's a simple matter to attack the power grid. You don't need weapons. You don't need explosives. Simple tools from the local hardware store is all you need to bring down the power grid. Sledgehammers, bolt cutters, hacksaws, come-alongs, common hardware tools, items is all you need to bring down the power grid. No explosives, no weapons necessary. So I expect those attacks to be happening, Dave, nationwide, primarily attacking electric substations, which there are thousands of them all around the country. No guards, no security camera, simply a chain link fence, and nobody about. If they want to cause havoc, the quickest and easiest way is to attack the power grid, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And let's assume they are successful in throwing this country into a state of confusion. Is that when the Chi-Coms mobilize and come in?
Well, they've got their plan. First of all, I believe they'll use the barefoot peasants with AK-47s from South America first. As brutal and barbaric as Chinese are, they'd rather the barefoot peasants from South America throw themselves against Americans first. So once Americans have used up their ammunition against each other and against the barefoot peasants with AK-47s from South America, the Chi-Coms and the Russians will come in to, they may be brought in as UN peacekeepers to save the day, when in fact their real role is to consolidate the victory and make sure that we all end up dead, quite frankly.
There is some documentation to support what you just said, and it goes to the leaked document called FM39.4, Army Field Manual. And in that document, they talk about detention camps, and they talk about how they're going to be run by Americans in the beginning, but they talk about a transitional phase where foreign operatives are going to be trained to run the camps. And that's very similar to what you're saying here. And speaking of the camps, do you think Americans are headed for the camps? Well, it depends who's in charge.
If there's no food and your children are hungry, you will go to a camp.
Yeah.
Of course you are. Of course you will. Food will be the weapon. That's been mentioned by these globalists for decades, how food will be used as a weapon to get people to comply. It's a very powerful vehicle for compliance, the opportunity to make sure that your wife and your children get some food. That will be how they get them there, voluntarily, by the way. They won't have to force them. They'll go voluntarily.
What about the people that are prepped? Are they going to be able to stay outside the system and largely
Well, they'll
be
saved
alone?
For last. We're a nuisance. Relatively speaking, we're a nuisance. Maybe 3%, 5% is very optimistic. People who are truly prepared to deal with us. We're just considered a nuisance, and we'll be left to be dealt with after everything else is consolidated and taken care of. That's when they'll come after us.
And so let me ask an ex-military guy, how divided do you think our military is, and will this be a conflict of general versus general?
It could be. Hussein Obama fired many of the patriotic flag rank officers.
Yes.
Not all of them, and of course there's been flag rank officers promoted since Obama left. And that's a critical point, is who will the flag rank officers support? Will they support the Constitution, or will they support their handlers and the New World Order? I simply don't know the answer to that. I know that the stage was set by design by Hussein Obama during his 8 years of firing men and women who were flag rank officers and believed their oath of office. Many of these fired generals could be brought back. As long as they're healthy, they can be brought back to their active duty status. And I hope the president has done some of that. I've seen no documentation on it, but I hope he's done some of that.
Do you think the election is the catalyst for what we're talking about?
It is, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. The catalyst is the point at which everything changes. If we do manage to get to the 3rd of November without having nationwide chaos, that's a blessing. All bets are off the 4th of November, though.
Sounds like you're kind of betting on the fact that you think there's going to be nationwide chaos before the election.
I can't take it off the table. I couldn't sleep at night if I didn't warn people ahead of time. I did this, going back to the Tet Offensive of 1968, I got off the plane in Saigon the first week of September 1967. Within 10 days or so, I knew there was going to be a Tet Offensive in 1968. It was not a failure of intelligence at the lowest level. And I was a 20-year-old corporal. Nobody was lower in the intelligence department than myself. If 20-year-old Corporal John Moore knew there was going to be a Tet Offensive, do you think the higher-ups did? Well, of course they did. It was no secret. And I warned my buddies all that fall. I said, guys, that disgusting fruitcake your parents send you for Christmas, don't throw it away. Hold on to it. Stock up ammunition anywhere you can get it, and other foods, because they're going to hit us, and they're going to hit us hard. Despite my warnings, only a few of my members of my unit paid heed. Most did not. They were distracted with other things, doing their jobs. So, yes, it's coming. It's coming like a freight train out of control downhill, and we aren't going to stop it, Dave.
Those are chilling words when I hear you say we're not going to stop it. It parallels what Kamala Harris said when she was defending Antifa and Black Lives Matter, saying, yeah, this is good protests, and it's going to continue to the election and after. And to me, that was a signal for complete domestic unrest.
Right. Well, she's playing to her base of support, what she was doing, as opposed to Biden distancing himself last Tuesday from his base of support, which is the same base of support, socialist communists.
Yeah, Green Deal. Who are you kidding? Right. He signed on to Bernie's manifesto. Trump was right on the money.
There is no manifesto, don't you know?
There's no hammer and sickle either.
Right. No, they lost a few percentage points when he backed away from the new Green Deal. And every point counts. We're at a point in time. Here's what I tell people, Dave. You're an educator, and you probably know the following. That half the adults in this country are either semi-literate or illiterate, especially those under 50 years old. And whoever influences the most illiterate, semi-literate voters, that person will be elected president. That's an unfortunate reality, isn't it?
Hell, terrible. Terrible. And in fact, it's the people that don't even pay attention to politics until a week before that could decide the election.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've said the same thing. It's really very, very disturbing. Do you think that the Democrats have the wherewithal to pull off enough voter fraud? And let me preface the question. I'm just going on round numbers, what I see. Biden rallies versus Trump rallies, okay? And then we see, like today, the anomaly of Trump supporters in D.C. behind enemy lines. And D.C. is behind enemy lines with Bowser in charge. And we see all these wonderful displays for Trump and nothing for Biden. So the polls are totally fake.
Right.
I'm almost feeling that Trump could get 70% of the vote.
It'll be overwhelming. It will be overwhelming. But let's not forget the Electoral College. They have raw numbers when it comes to these major cities, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York. They've got a lot of raw numbers. But the popular vote is not what elects a president. It's the Electoral College. And the vote fraud, once the vote fraud gets above 8 or 10%, it starts becoming really obvious that it is vote fraud. So they'll take it as far as they can without making it obvious that what they're doing. In the meantime, it's too late to register to vote for most people. It depends on what state you live in. If you can, if not registered to vote, you need to be registered to vote right now. Yep. Monday morning, get to the county clerk's office. Get registered to vote if you're still allowed to. And help people get to the polls, whatever it takes. Offer child care, offer transportation, whatever it takes. Give them your employees a day off to go vote. Because we need overwhelming numbers, Dave. We really need those overwhelming numbers really bad, don't we?
Yeah, I was talking to a staffer for an Arizona congressman, and she told me, she said, we really believe we have to get 60% of the presidential vote in the swing states, the contested states, with the highest electoral votes to win the election.
We do.
60%, that's phenomenal.
It is, but there's no choice. It has to happen. And every vote counts. Many people, my vote, I'm just one person. My vote doesn't count. I've seen in my county, a woman was running for her county office. She lost by 6 votes, and her blood relatives didn't vote for her. So these votes can be, these elections can be decided by a very slim margin. But at the presidential level, we need every vote we can get, don't we, Dave?
We really do. What do you make of the comments? And I'm confused by this. Pelosi made a comment about a month ago. She said, I don't know if Trump knows it or not. He's leaving the White House the day after the election and will fumigate his office. What do you think she meant by that specifically? Any guesses?
Well, I'm guessing it's posturing to appeal to her base and motivate her base.
Okay, just basically talking trash.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, because I took that as, wait a minute, is she going to march in there with somebody and remove him? Because even if he were to lose the election, he's the president until the third week of January.
That's right. That's right. And that's not going to change. And the Secret Service won't tolerate that. The Marines won't tolerate that. And it's not going to happen.
My goodness. Do you think the left would be motivated to not have the election?
No. The election is going to take place a month from today. That will happen.
Okay.
That what they do want is chaos and questions being unanswered as to the true numbers and who got elected president. These mail-in ballots are an absolute nightmare. Some jurisdictions are having very big problems with mail-in ballots, others are not. But it's all part of the overall Democratic plan to cause chaos for the outcome of this election, Dave.
They're well organized, aren't they?
Oh, they are. You never underestimate your enemy. That's a massive mistake.
They've had 4 years to prepare, yeah.
They're smart, they're organized, and they got lots of money behind them. Don't underestimate these people at all.
Here's where I have a real disconnect emotionally. I haven't liked a lot of presidents in my lifetime, a few. But I would never think of betraying my own country, throwing down with a communist Chinese like Feinstein and her friends. How I look at this, and the treason in this country is rampant. And this is what the Trump presidency has exposed, is how deep the deep state really is.
Look at the CVs, the bios of these men and women arrested, these Antifa men and women. Almost all of them come from families of privilege, going to private boarding schools in high school, going to private colleges that charge $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 per year. I've known back during the Vietnam War days, I knew some of these people. They hate themselves. They hate their privilege. They hate their country. And it's a form of psychosis, quite frankly, Dave. It really is. For people growing up in that environment, and turning their back on that, on the privilege that they grew up with, to destroy the privilege that got them to where they are and make everybody equal. They really do believe this communist fantasy that everybody can and should be equal in every way, including economically. It is a form of psychosis, Dave, and you and I aren't going to change it.
What's amazing, though, is they can't find any historical precedent to justify their belief.
They don't care. They don't care. They really don't care. They're using, it was kind of funny, these Wall Street protesters were doing their thing. What was that? That was before Trump, 7-8 years ago. They're using the same chants, the exact same chants from the 1960s, the exact same communist chants from the 1960s. Nothing much has changed.
You know, it reminds me, what we're seeing today is a widely expanded Weatherman Underground with Bill Ayers.
Probably. Since they operate in secret, it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't surprise me if Bill Ayers is still associated with these people.
Oh, he is. He is. He's actually behind the Chapman University propaganda that's behind the reparations and all the stuff that Newsom's doing with the lockdowns. Yeah, he's still very active. But I mean, I remember I interviewed the late Larry Grathwall, who was an FBI informant who penetrated the Weatherman. And Bill Ayers told him, when we take over, and he's the guy that launched Obama's career. That's what's really significant about this story. And he told Bill, or Larry, I should say, that when we take over, we're going to have to put 50 million Americans in re-education camps and do away with over half of them. And do you think that's a prevailing viewpoint of the other side?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. These people are full of themselves. They think they have power to do things that there's no way they can do.
Well, let me ask you this. A year from now, if we lose this election, will there be a purge like what I just asked?
I'm not sure what shape, what form it will take, but yes, there will be. With the assistance of United Nations troops and foreign troops coming in here, they will reform this country to be something that we never dreamed of. It won't be positive. It'll be very negative.
And safe to say that well over half the country is totally ignorant about that possibility?
For the most part.
Yeah, you know, that's what I see too.
And the kind of detail that you and I are discussing, there's about 60% of Americans concerned about civil war taking place this year, but they really don't have a clue of how bad and how quickly it can get that bad. They really don't.
Well, what I get from these people, you know, and I read my message boards and when I have any conversations, what they're really worried about is high taxes, spending, changing the Constitution to favor certain groups on the Democrats. On the Republicans, they're worried about fascism. And this is what the mainstream seems to be saying, and they don't get it. They don't see that there are people who want to take over this country that want a lot of us dead.
Right, right. Well, that's the Chinese goal, and I've got the Chinese general's defense minister's speech on my website. We somehow got our hands on it and got it translated. They want America with no Americans. That's the bottom line. That is their ultimate mm-hmm. goal. America with no Americans, so they can move about a third of a billion Chinese here to take over everything we've got. That's what they really want.
Exactly. And not only that, these Chinese defense ministers, they go back to 2003. This has been their policy, the extermination of Americans for the purpose of no co-occupancy in America. That's been their policy now for 17 years that I can trace.
Right, right. Well, it's not just America. A friend of mine, he runs a restaurant in Metro St. Louis. He's from Zambia. I almost said Zimbabwe. Zambia. He still has relatives that live in Zambia, his parents and siblings. And I started talking about the Chinese colonization of Sub-Sahara Desert. And he was aware of some of it, but not all of it. And he says, yeah, John, that makes sense. My friend Command Sergeant Major Page, he spent a year of his life working undercover in Sub-Sahara Desert, Africa, visiting most of those countries, documenting what the Chinese are doing, which is building roads, water treatment plants, power treatment plants, airports, everything they need to colonize Sub-Sahara Africa. And they're doing that right now. That's been going on for years. Plus, they have their highway finished. It goes from China, beginning at the Hindu Kush in Afghanistan, all the way to Africa. And they're preparing to build a causeway across the Horn of Africa to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, cutting off several days travel on these trucks.
The Belt and Road Initiative, and the Chinese are masters at it. John, we're just about out of time. We got about 30 seconds left, and I wanted you to tell my audience how they can follow your great work.
Absolutely. Well, everything is linked at my website at thelibertyman.com. Do not use a search engine. Put it right in your browser, thelibertyman.com. My show is Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time. Archives on YouTube. You can listen anytime you want. And a lot of great information at my website at thelibertyman.com.
John, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I appreciate the work you do. You're one of my heroes, and Paul Martin says that too. We talk about you often, and you are a trendsetter with the news stories you break. Thank you so much, John, for coming on.
Thank you, Dave.
Take care, John.
Thank you.